Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, folks, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron.
Yo, we got Tornado Palooza going. It's the Tornado Tony Pentagon.
Wow. We have a great show for everybody tonight. We've got another couple of guests from the Liberty card, Maximum Fighting Championships up there in Canada. And we got a UFC guy, actually the Ultimate Fighter show guy, Smiling Sam Alvey, coming on at 8:30. And then we have his opponent at that MFC 40 show, Wes Swofford, coming on the 9:15 slot. And we're going to leave him on, we're going to leave Sam on a little bit to talk a little smack back and forth with Wes before we get into Wes's interview, so that should be interesting. But lots of news to cover, lots of events coming up. We got UFC 171 to talk about. We got UFC Fight Night 38 just happened. And we got another Bellator show coming up tomorrow. MMA, I know we got big boxing this weekend.
But, right.
Andy Garcia card is this weekend. We got, there's a big public weigh-in for that tomorrow. We just announced some of the other fights on that card. So we'll talk a little bit about that. We got some big Rocky news. Not Rocky Marciano, but Rocky Balboa.
Is that about the statue again?
Nope. This is an interesting one. This one might upset you, Tony. if I can find it. Apparently, the director of Rocky,
John G. Avildsen, or whatever his name is,
Rocky V, had a plan that was changed in the end. And the plan actually, he recently revealed it. He had never talked to anybody about it, apparently, or never let it slip before, but he did an interview with some Philadelphia radio station and said that Rocky was actually supposed to die at the end of Rocky.
Yeah. Dude, that's common knowledge.
Oh, you didn't...
He hasn't been there for 20 years.
But the original plan was to have Rocky Balboa die in Adrian's lap following the beating he suffered at the hands of Tommy Gunn.
Yeah. And actually, I have a book. It's from the two Philadelphia authors, like greatest sports movies, and they had Rocky listed as the best. But then as they had like all the sequels progressively got like more and more outlandish, and they were like, and they hated Rocky V. I mean, despised Rocky V. And they're like, we wish he would have kept the original ending where he dropped dead after the fight. So yeah, that's well documented. At least, you know, from Philadelphia, we know about it.
Right. I guess it says here they decided to change the plot line just 2 weeks into filming.
I mean, you got to look at it this way. Go back and look at all the Rocky movies. Every one of them. The one thing I think that really screwed Five up is the fact that there was a street fight, but it wasn't a climactic scene. You know, and when you leave at the end of every Rocky movie, except probably for Rocky Five, you feel good about yourself. You know, in the first one, he's not expected to win, but you know, he comes back and he goes to this one, and he's winning at the end, and he wins the girl and all that stuff. You feel good. Rocky Two, you know, the dramatic, you know, two double knockdown, he gets up, he wins the player, you feel good. Rocky III comes back to beat Clubber Lang, and they're all celebrating with Apollo and all those guys. You feel good. Rocky IV, ends the Cold War. You feel good. Yeah, Rocky V, imagine he dies. You sure as hell walk out of there feeling good. And it was hard enough. Like every Rocky, if you think about him, there was always that big training scene. And like with the music going, you never get that in Rocky V. The best you get in Rocky V is some horrible early 90s hip-hop song when Tommy Gunn's knocking a lot of these guys out. That's the only montage you really get. You don't get that good training montage that picks you up and makes you want to go out and run 48 miles and chop down 12 trees and drink a chicken's worth of eggs. You know, you don't have a good feeling again. So by Rocky V, they just, every time, at the end, after the street fight, and he's up looking at the statue with his son, and he gives his son the Marciano coupling. Okay, you end up feeling good. Why didn't he die? He cares, I wouldn't feel too good. So they made the right move in not using it.
Right. Well, that's good stuff. We did have a lot of fights to talk about. We'll get to the boxing. I guess there's some big cards and there's some small cards coming up this weekend. The 15th, actually, out there in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, there's a pretty decent card. Isaac Chalimba facing Dennis Gorychev. Some regional titles as well as the IBO championship titles in the middleweight division. And Rachel, I think, was last in the news when he was part of that big Monte Carlo tournament that Edwin Rodriguez was in. Rachel has been 2-2 in his last four fights. Competed in the Monte Carlo Super 4 and got blitzed by Edwin Rodriguez in the first round. He also lost to Lucien Boutte in Montreal in November of 2012. Also on this card is Thomas Adamek, fighting Vyacheslav Glazkov, 0-1, and this is an IBF heavyweight title of the year. Adamek will have home field advantage on Saturday since he always attracts the largest number of Polish fans wherever he fights. And he's obviously the favorite. But he's 37, so you got to wonder how much time he's got left to compete at the optimal level. Glazkov won a bronze medal in the 2008 Olympic Games. Adamek never got to that level. So, pretty easy match. I think it should be in the finals. Well, 16 wins and draws. 17 total pro fights to 51. Quite the experience count here. So that is. Another guy from Philly we've had on the show a couple times. He's going to be fighting April 4th. A heavyweight bout. it's a guy that Adamek is familiar with, Steve Cunningham. He's 26 and and he's fighting an undefeated guy, Amir Mansour, who's 20-0, and that's for the USBA heavyweight title. And that's going to be on the campus of Temple University in Philly.
That's April 4th, right?
Right. It's going to be the main event of NBC Sports Network Fight Night.
I was talking to two people I know, and I was grabbing some tickets to that card. But my dad now maybe is an early father they get.
There you go.
You know me, if it's a fight, I'll go.
Yeah, Steve's a good guy, too. He'll probably remember you since I interviewed him twice. We had a seminar before we interviewed him. We had him really going, and then we had to cut out. I don't think we knew at that time we had the ability to do overtime.
And I talked to him like cards in my
book. Here's one we haven't really discussed, though. I know it's been in the news, but for some reason this keeps getting over. Miguel Cotto is going to be challenging WBC middleweight champion Sergio Martinez. That's June 7th at Madison Square Garden. I don't know about this one. I think Cotto is still trying to be viable, but he hasn't had a lot of luck in a championship fight lately, so we'll see how this one goes.
Yeah. I didn't see it, but someone told me that at the breast conference, Cotto lifted a little hook around the middle.
Yeah.
It's a little heavy.
Well,
granted, we've got a few months of the fight, so.
Yeah, he's obviously going to get a little trimmer when we get closer.
Remember, you're shooting him with Freddie Roach now, too. He looked pretty good in his last fight. But we'll see, you know, what he really got left. I mean, there's a lot of doubts on Martinez, too. Martinez, you know, he's up there, he's close to 40 years old. He's had, coming off some knee trouble. You know, no guarantee in this fight. Obviously, Martinez is going to be favored. He's a naturally bigger man. But, you know, Cotto's definitely got a viable shot.
Oh, yeah. He's obviously capable of putting together a great performance when he has to, and he's had some great fights against big names. I just think Martinez is way better than him at this stage. And, I'd say he's got to be the favorite. But as we know, anything can happen in boxing. Even kickboxing. Had a chance to watch some of the glory kickboxing we had last weekend. I caught some of it, and one of the main events in the tournament they had was a hell of a comeback. It was just kind of an average Joe-looking guy against a cut dude that looked like he was way ahead of the game, and then ended up getting knocked out in the final round. It's pretty entertaining. I don't usually watch kickboxing. I was very disappointed with a lot of the referees, the way they let these guys right back into the action, only to watch them get knocked to the ground and knocked completely out after they get a standing eight count, in which they should have been waved off. But I don't know why that is. It seems to happen so often in kickboxing like that, or at least in glory, but I think they need to look at the referee. A lot of guys could have gone home without the headache. Let's see what else we got for big boxing matches around the world.
Well, I didn't get to see the fight last week. I was supposed to be at a aired at the one casino I was going to, but they did not air it, which kind of sucks. And then, as usual, I got impatient because I went to the another local sports bar called Printed Pill, and they rarely ever get boxing pay-per-views unless it's either Pacquiao or Mayweather. I get a little impatient with that. Basically, they didn't get this one, but they'll get like every UFC pay-per-view.
Wow, this is interesting. I didn't know Lou Severese is a promoter. He's got a fight going on in Texas tomorrow night. Still don't have an opponent for the guy. One fight on the card, a flyweight fight. Juan Lija, 7-1 with two knockouts, fighting TBA. That's weird. No, I really don't see any one fight cards. I don't see a Friday night fight card this week, so I guess...
No, I think you said it was preemptive this week. I'm not sure if it was the basketball or...
March Madness.
I know that the tournament's supposed to start literally right around now. So May have started or is starting. So... Well, tomorrow night I'm doing a super early evening, but I got an early morning flight out on Saturday.
Huh.
Yeah.
Going south?
Yep.
Flying south for what's left of the winter?
Flying south, that's right. Might not come back. It's down in Florida, then go straight to Vegas.
There you go. A lot of fights going on Saturday all over the world here. One of the big ones.
Well, when we quickly talk a little bit about the fight from last week, I didn't get a chance to write the article on it, but if anybody goes back and listens to my transcript from last week's call, the Rain Man came through again for you. I think a lot of it came down to the fact that Aguino took a lot of punishment in his last fight. Canelo lost, he lost to Floyd Mayweather, who supremely outboxed him, but at the same time did not beat him up. With Canelo being the younger guy, being the fresher guy, fresher legs, I kind of figured that Aguino's best chance to win was drawing him into a back and forth kissing contest, to be honest. And from what I heard, Canelo didn't let that happen, and he really impressively broke Aguino down. The fight finally stopped in the 10th round, and from what I heard, it should have stopped probably two rounds earlier. Aguino's corner let him go out for the last two rounds, and they really should not have. And that's kind of the way I saw it happening. I saw it being a stoppage over the second half, and if I remember correctly, I think I said anywhere between 7 and 10.
Well, when I watched some of that fight, I actually fell asleep before the conclusion there. But I watched some of the undercard fights, that fight for at least, I think, 4 rounds, and I really didn't see anything in Rulo that made it worth watching the rest of the way. That's probably why I fell asleep, because it didn't seem to be very competitive at all. Although they did say that Angulo had at least one good round where that he won late in the contest. But actually, the bigger story, I think, even though it didn't get a lot of press, was another Angulo. Fernando Angulo had a fight in Mexico over the weekend, and didn't really get a lot of press, but the WBC actually came out afterwards and advocated for instant replay in boxing. They made like a real big push for it and said that it's got to happen because that fight, I don't remember exactly who it was. I'll probably find out before the end of the call and tell everybody. But Fernando Angulo, I think, won the fight, and it ended up being decided by a cut. And, of course, there's rules. If a cut is caused by a clash of heads, it's different than if a cut is caused by a punch. You know, you got to go to the scorecards. If it's a clash of heads, usually after so many rounds, and say TKO if it's caused by a punch. So they did use instant replay there in Mexico, and they found out that it was a cut caused by a punch. So the right guy ended up with the decision. So that was pretty interesting. I think I've got that somewhere in my notes. I'll get the names on that in a second here. Yeah, so check that out. But it makes a lot of sense, and I always come up with the example of a fight I was at live out in Vegas at the Metropolitan, the Cosmopolitan, I should say. Big new casino out there on the strip, and I forget who the fighters were, but there was an instance where a low blow was called, and one of the Spanish-speaking photographers was sitting right next to me, and he showed me the picture that he took at that very second of the punch. And sure enough, it was right above the belt line, not even grazing the belt line. And the referee still called it low. So I think that actually the guy got a point taken off, too. So it was a very crucial bad call.
It's sad to see. I mean, you will see that sometimes. It hurts. It hurts the sport. You don't have replay in boxing right now. And I mean, I can see both sides of both arguments. Okay, to take the integrity of the sport, it could, take away judgment calls, things like that. But at the same time, what's right is right, what's wrong is wrong. I remember watching a fighter one time with a title fight, and he got hit with a good body shot. It was like a hook to the liver, and he went down, and the referee called it a little well. And it clearly was not. I've seen other fights where, the punch landed about 6 inches low, and the guy went down, and the referee called it a knockdown. One of the most controversial calls of all time, now granted, long before you and I were around, I think it was around the turn of the last century. And forgetting the fighters' names right now, I forget if it was Ad, Wolfstadt, and I don't remember off the top of my head. Two guys are fighting, and they both landed simultaneous punches. One fighter landed a shot, and it blew the guy's doubles, and like literally right to the nuts. The other guy landed the guy who got hit in the nuts landed a left hook to the chin. Both guys go down. One guy can get knocked out from the left hook to the chin. The other guy on the ground from the nose well. The referee actually helped the guy up that was knocked out from getting hit in the chin, and it followed him up. Well, he counted out the guy that was down from the low block. Yeah.
Well, that was Pablo Cesar Cano, who lost that fight with Fernando Angulo, by the way, and the fight was in Mexico, and it was the decision of the Boxing Commission of the State of Mexico. I think they're a state, but I guess that's what they call themselves here. That decided to use the replay. And like I said, it was initially looked at as a clash of heads, but the replay showed that it was definitely a punch. And it stopped in the ninth round, and Angulo got the TKO victory. And speaking of bad calls, we have Tom on the line. No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Yeah, hey, this is exciting. We're talking about bringing boxing into the 21st century, huh?
Baseball is expanding to instant replay. Why not?
Well, right? it's just, okay, to play devil's advocate then, what would be the downside? I mean, would the argument be it's going to interrupt the flow of the fight or give someone an unfair advantage? What do you think? I mean, because boxing's so resistant to change. What is the argument against using it? I'm not saying abusing it. I'm saying using it.
Well, I see it, if they're going to implement it on a widespread basis, like they'd probably do it like these other sports have done it, piecemeal. You get one challenge as a corner or as a fighter, two challenges if you get it right the first time, something like that, and then, you'd have to come up with guidelines on what could be challenged and what could be.
Yeah, but I don't see that as climbing Mount Everest. I mean, that's not putting someone on Mars. It shouldn't be that difficult. I mean, like the way they'll do it in the NFL, what, you've got three of them, or if you lose a timeout or something, I don't know, you can, isn't it, if you challenge once, you lose a timeout, if it's not overturned, right, something like that?
Right.
Okay, and then you say baseball's now slowly getting into it, but I mean, I would think they could come up with something, because I just caught what Tony was saying, and you're right, Tony. I mean, it's so frustrating when we see bad judging. I mean, that is bad enough to have to worry about. But then when you get something like that where it's a legitimate punch and it's called a foul, or the other way around, when it is a low punch and it's called a legitimate punch.
I remember once in a fight, and I'm going back probably around the mid to late 90s, and if my memory serves me correct, it was an Arturo Gatti fight. Not one of his, barn burners, not one that we're all going to remember. It may have been a rematch with Tracy Harris-Patterson, who he first won the title from. In fact, my memory's starting to jog a little bit. That may be the fight that I just mentioned where the fighter got hit with a body shot and went down, and the ref called it a low blow. That may have been Gotti that went down from that shot. against Patterson. Gotti had beaten him in the first fight, won the title from him. They had a rematch. And I remember the referee, who was a referee I've met several times, by the name of Rudy Battle. And I like Rudy Battle. I remember watching Rudy Battle even when I was a kid. He's now, I think, part of the, he's either the Pennsylvania State Commissioner that superseded Greg Serb. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I know Rudy Battle now has a post with the Pennsylvania State Athletic Commission. I don't know if he's a commissioner or a step below. I don't remember that for sure. But Rudy was having a bad night. Rudy was making some bad calls, and then at times, like, he was stepping in and, like, breaking up the action for no reason. Like, if the guys even were fighting in close, he was stepping in and breaking them up. And I remember him thinking, like, he's a good referee. He's mm-hmm. having a real bad night. A real bad night. Trying to think of, you know, then you have a referee that I mentioned last week, a guy by the name of Lawrence Cole, who has constantly come under scrutiny.
Yeah, all the time. I mean, that goes back a long time.
Yeah, always coming under scrutiny. I know another real bad officiating was about 3 or 4 years ago. Right after Miguel Cotto had lost to Manny Pacquiao, and he was coming on his comeback trail, and he fought a guy by the name of Yuri Foreman. And Yuri does not deserve the last name Foreman. If you think of Foreman, you think of a devastating knockout, devastating puncher. And Yuri Foreman was like 31 and whatever, with like 6 knockouts. Anything but a puncher. And Cotto was winning that fight, and Foreman hurt his knee. And he literally couldn't even move anymore. And
oh,
corner,
I remember
he
that.
Yeah, and Rattani wouldn't let him stop the fight. He was like, no. He wouldn't let him throw the towel in. And then, like, a round or two later, with this guy taking punishment, Cotto hit him with a body shot, and the guy couldn't even stand anymore. Just the force of a punch knocked him over, and Rattani stopped it. I'm like, now, what was the necessary reason for those last two rounds? After the corner, I think they threw the towel in, and he threw it out of the ring.
Yeah. All right, well, I'm playing, you know, a Monday morning quarterback here, but I would just think from a legal standpoint that if this would go to the commission, I mean, let's assume that you're cornering Foreman and you just say, no, I'm not sending him back out there. The welfare of my fighter is on the line. He cannot continue in a safe manner. I don't care what you say, ref. I don't care, okay? And then the referee goes to a hearing and say, well, he didn't do what I said. I can't imagine the commission suspending Yuri Foreman. I never heard of anything like that, ever. And I've been around it just a long time.
I've never seen a fight, ever, where the corner was not allowed to throw the towel in.
Right, exactly.
I've seen fights on TV. And I can still hear Jim Lampley or Larry Merchant or what's the judge's name? Harold Letterman. Harold Letterman. Harold, do the rules for the fight. They're like, okay, tonight's for our fighter sponsored by the Association of Boxing, the world of what it is. You know, there's no 3 knockdown rule. The standing 8 count's not in effect. The only the referee can stop the fight. That's meaning the doctor cannot stop the fight. And it'll say, the doctor, if there's a cut, the doctor can recommend that the fight be stopped, but the doctor cannot stop it.
And I kind of get the feeling that most of the time the referee would go along with the doctor's recommendation. But the point is, when the corner itself is saying, my fighter is in danger, he cannot continue. I never, ever have I heard of a situation where the referee says, I ain't going to let him quit. I mean, think now if Foreman's career would have been over or worse. I mean, this is not a game of checkers. I mean, think about it now. He goes out and say something worse happened to him besides losing his career, which would be horrible enough. And don't tell me it can't happen.
Right.
One punch is an old cliche. One punch can destroy a career. And we all know examples where that's happened. But I'm saying, now who's the liability on? When you go in front of the commission and say, well, we begged to stop this fight. He could not continue, and Arthur McCanny said, get out there anyways. I don't care. Get out there and die. Now, come on. Now the question, my follow-up, was McCanny ever censored for what he did in that fight?
Probably not. And probably because of who his father was.
All right, well, we got to cut this one short. We got our special guest on the line, Smiling Sam Alvey, right? Sam, can you hear us?
Yes, sir. Yeah, hi.
How's it going?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. How are you guys doing?
Great,
good.
Sam.
That's great to hear.
Well, give us a little bit of a rundown on how you got into the fight game in the first place.
Hey, sorry, you guys sound like you're in a can, or maybe it's me. I'm not sure.
We're on a speakerphone. That might be the problem. But
all right, you sound a little clearer there.
All right, I got the microphone a little closer.
Give
us a little rundown of how you got into the fight game.
You know, it all started when I was just kind of hanging out, and I heard about a cage fight going on. I thought, well, shoot, I'm a tough guy. Why not? So I, you know, went down and said, hey, can I get on your card? And they said, sure. So I went out there and got my butt kicked. But I was kind of hooked after that. I wasn't quite hooked enough to start training, but I got another one, and I started beating people. Then eventually somebody said, hey, you should, you know, if you turn pro, you could get paid to do this. And I thought, well, that would be the day. So I said, all right, I'm a pro now. And, yeah, lo and behold, people started paying me to do it. Not a ton to begin with, but enough to make me want to keep doing it. And before long, I learned that MMA was a thing, you know, that I could do if I kept winning. And then I started training, and, you know, the rest is history, I guess.
And obviously you're on The Ultimate Fighter, so tell us a little bit about how that went down.
Ultimate Fighter, it was a great experience. They called up, said, hey, can you make 170 pounds? I said, sure, why not? And so I started cutting that day. And it was a hard cut, but I got onto the show, you know, had a big knockout to get in the house. I got to meet both the fighters, the coaches, a little bit, and that was a lot of fun. And I really got to meet a lot of talented people in the profession. It's really helped my career.
What was your favorite part about that whole episode?
Can you say that one more time, sir?
What was the best part of that experience that year for you, working on the show?
You know, the best part was working with the coaches. Shane Carwin is just a fantastic, fantastic coach, fantastic person. Just all the skill in the world. I wish he wouldn't have gotten injured. I would have loved to have seen him beat up Big Country. And his whole training staff, you know, the Grudge up in Colorado, they're just professionals. They're some of the best at what they do, and they pass on their knowledge like it was their job. I was just blessed to have worked with them.
Cool. And so how'd you end up in Canada?
You know, it's no secret that my season of the show wasn't the greatest season that's ever been. There were a lot of dud fights, so pretty much everyone was canned afterwards. And that's fine, you know what, I didn't have a great showing while I was on the show anyways. But I do have a style that people like to watch. I've got heavy hands, I can take a punch, my wrestling's pretty good too, so I can handle myself anywhere. And that's kind of what the MFC looks for. They look for the best in the world, and they look for people, fighters that fans like to watch. So the MFC approached me with a contract, and I said, you know what, you guys have put on some of the best shows, best cards I've ever seen. I would love to be part of it.
Awesome. And what do you think about is it just as good down here in the States, a lot of these guys and gyms up there?
Can you say it one more time, sir? I'm sorry.
What do you think about the scene up in Canada as far as, you know, training places and coaches and all that?
Well, you know, one of the best fighters in the entire world is from Canada. GSP is, you know, he's unarguably, if not the best, one of the best, the top three. And his gym has done it for him. TriStar is an amazing gym. They've got a lot of talent up there. But more than the gyms up there, I love fighting for the fans up there. You know, I've fought all around the world, and to this day, Canada is one of my favorite places to go. It seems like the fans up there really appreciate what we're doing in front of them.
And how about your ultimate goal for the sport?
My ultimate goal is to make a good career for myself and life for my family. The MFC is helping me do it. They are one of the best shows in the world, and they treat us fighters like we belong in the top names in the world. So it's been a pleasure working with them, and it's kind of my goal to keep up a great relationship with them as long as I can provide for my family.
Awesome. And do you have a particular style you favor, strike that you like to use a lot, anything that is your signature?
You know what, I like hitting people. It's no secret. I've got a lot of wrestling. I work with Team Quest here in California, one of the best wrestling gyms in the world. But I like hitting people, and the people that like watching me know that I like hitting people, and I tend to draw a crowd because of it.
Oh, not just because of your smile?
You know what, the smile keeps them in their mind, but no, I think it's my rear hooks that people like to see.
Yeah. And what's the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight?
One of the most important things is I just got to keep training. I train year-round. I'm not one of the fighters that ever take any time off. So after my fight against Jason South, I was back in the gym that Monday helping Jesse Taylor get ready for his fight and then helping Tarek Safadine get ready for his UFC debut. Right now, earlier today, I was in the, helping Dan put on the finishing touches for his second fight against Shogun. So just staying ready. I don't take any time off because it's a job. Construction workers don't get time off. Why should I?
Exactly. So as far as, looking at other people's styles and other fights, is there anybody out there that you really have to watch every time they fight and that you've become a fan favorite of, even as a fighter?
Tom Galicchio is one of my favorite fighters in the world. He's just incredibly exciting. I know how good his ground game is, and what most people don't know is how good his stand-up is. He's one of the hardest hitters I've ever trained with, and he just places them everywhere. So I love watching him fight because everyone's scared of his ground game, but nobody knows about his stand-up game until they're in the ring with him.
All right. Well, we got two other
calls. It just so happens that Tom Galicchio is fighting on the same card as me, so it's going to be such a good card.
Awesome. Tom, Tony, any questions?
Yeah, Sam. First off, we were talking about the show, and maybe it wasn't a perfect environment, but I was very impressed by your emotional balance on that show because it seemed like there was a lot of immaturity from some of your some of your temporary roommates, some of the games trying to keep people up at night and everything like that, just that childish stuff. But I really think you've got the right mental approach to the game. And I always look for that, in young guys coming up. And like I said, I just think you really had a lot of just mental strength there in that. Now, do you think that your mindset comes from your training, or did you just kind of, I didn't know you went into the cage without even having any training. That's an incredible achievement. But where do you think, what's the source of your mental balance? Because, like you said, I really think you've got that going good.
Part of it is I really enjoy doing this. Mm-hmm. And a lot of fighters do it, for the money or for the pride or for the honor. I do it because I enjoy doing it. And everyone, all the fighters say they do, but they say they do and then. Or they have a butt. And I like doing this. I've been blessed with a gift, and I get to go out and do it. There's no reason for me to ever, fear or not train or do anything that would be detrimental to something I really enjoy doing.
Well, years ago I read a book on success, and, a lot of these success books have a whole bunch of different things you need to do. This book was real simple. Two things. First off, know what you want. And the second thing is be prepared to do whatever it takes to get to where you want to be. And I've known you for all of a few minutes now, but I just sense you've got that mindset that, regardless of what you need to learn, regardless of how you have to train, you're going to do it.
You know what?
Sure, go ahead.
that is, I do feel that way. I know what I need to do, and I, you know, every day, every minute of every day, I'm doing what I need to try and achieve it. You know, I work out all day, every day, for this end goal. And even when I'm not working out, I'm resting in a way that helps me so I can work out later. It's just, I know what I want to do. I know how to do it. I've just got to do it.
And you know, and I love your answer to that as far as, you know, construction workers don't get time off, so why in the heck should you stay out of the gym for a month and get out of shape and then come back in? I mean, this is a job, and I'll say this, that so many fighters don't realize you have a short career as far as your age, and you got to jump on it when you can, because I think it's kind of sad when you get older and sit there and say, well, woulda, coulda, shoulda. But I don't picture you on a rocking chair doing that when you're in your 60s or 70s, you know. I think you're going to go for it, and best of luck. I think a lot of good things are ahead for you.
Oh, thank you so much. I really hope so, and I'm putting in the work to try and earn it.
Mm-hmm. Now, Sam, you mentioned GSP a little bit earlier. Of course, we all know what happened with him recently. He took a break from the sport. And he actually also talked about having issues with OCD and just being obsessed with improving his game and just had to take a step back. Do you ever worry about getting to that point in your career where, you know, there's too much pressure, it's just getting old, or it's just getting too unbearable to keep going with it?
For me, I don't think it will ever be an issue. Like I said earlier, I love doing this. If at some point I don't love doing this, maybe it would become an issue, but I can't think of a day where I don't get up and go to the gym, you know, come home for an hour and then go back to the gym. So as of now, I don't think it'll ever happen to me, but then again, GSP is making millions of dollars and for every fight. For shoot, if he makes an appearance somewhere, he'll make, you know, thousands of dollars. So he's probably in a different place than I am right now. And I hope he comes back. He was always enjoyable to watch. And, you know, he left on top. His last fight was a close one, but he left with the belt on his waist.
Right. And as far as up there in Canada and in the MFC, what's the pay system like? Is it pretty fair, and does it you know, pay the bills and keep you from having to get any other kind of job?
The MFC is one of the biggest in the world, one of the best shows in the world, and they've got some of the best fighters in the world, and they treat us like it. They take care of us. If I needed more, I could talk to them. They'd have me fight more. But they've been great to me and my family, and we've been blessed to work with them. And on top of them being good to their fighters, they're good to the fans. Every card they put on is, you know, big fights that people want to see. They've got three title fights on this next card, which is insane. Anthony Burchak, who's one of the leading fighters in the world, he's on it. Tom Glicko, who just put on an incredible fight against Kurt Southern, he gets his rematch, and then there's me, who's hopefully to be the main event of the whole thing, and I promise you, if I am the main event, I will put on a show people talk about for the next month.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, how they're going to see this a little bit differently, like that, where they get to vote on the main event. The only thing close that I've ever heard of is when the UFC had that failed experiment with letting the fans pick fight of the night. But this sounds like a better idea. What else do they do in that vein to make things different?
Could you repeat the question? I heard the first part. I just lost the last half.
What else does the MFC do, like that voting system that you know, kind of connects with the fans a little better?
The MFC, they've done it once before, and to my knowledge, the first time any organization has ever done it. And it's that you have to tweet. You get online, and the MFC tries to listen to what the fans want. So you tweet three little things. If you want to see me as the main event, and I hope all of you do, because I promise you it's going to be a good one, I want just to have to tweet three little things. Hashtag the MFC, hashtag MFC40, because it is MFC40, and hashtag middleweight. If you elect me, I promise to go out there, I will do everything in my power to put on one heck of a show. And if you're in the audience that night, I promise I'll do even more after the fight.
Okay, Sam, you got us motivated. You got us motivated.
Good, I'm glad to hear it. I hope you guys are tweeting right now.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll be sure to put that on the broadcast page, too, somewhere, that fans can do that. So it's definitely exciting. How about what's the thing that you enjoy most about fighting?
I really don't know. I've thought about it, but it's just everything. It's how I work out every day, the people I work with, the rush I get as I'm, getting my hand raised. Just that 25 minutes of knowing that this guy wants to hurt me, and I want to hurt him right back. Afterwards, I'll love him to death. Jason South, we've got a great relationship. I've talked to him a couple times over Facebook. He's a great guy. And you know what? I'm sure after I submit Wes Swofford, we're going to love each other too. But it's just the whole experience leading up to the fight and the fight itself that just drives me.
Awesome. Tell us a little bit about your mentors or people who were role models for you, either inside or outside the sport, as you were coming up.
Oh, my dad. I mean, everyone answers, a similar answer. But my dad has been there every step of the way. He's helped instill in me the work ethic needed to be great at what you do. And he is great at what he does. So some of my training partners, Tarek Safadine, he's one of the hardest workers in the world. The dude does what needs doing, and he does it with a smile on. He's going to be the next UFC champion. Just give him a shot, and he will beat anyone in the 170-pound division. Just everyone. Dan Henderson, the dude's an icon. He is as good as it gets, and he beats me up every day. So just everyone I surround myself with, he helped push me forward to making me a better fighter.
Well,
yeah, and Dan goes back a long time, going back to the 90s even. He's one of the old school guys, so I'm sure he's seen so many generations of fighters, and he's seen the sport evolve. I'm sure he's a huge help to train with.
He is. He understands it better than most. And it's funny because, he's one. I think he's the oldest guy in the UFC right now, and I guarantee you he would beat all of them. I mean, there's like one or two guys that I think would be a problem for him, but I think he'd beat most of these guys and make it look easy. He's just that good. It's humbling because, I'm a young buck. I'm in my prime. I've got the NFC title around my waist, and Dan just, I'm a plaything to him.
Well, I think Dan represents the evolution. He came from a strong wrestling background, and then he added the boxing skills, added the submissions, and his Muay Thai is pretty good, too. So, the complete package. And Sam, one question here on cardio. Now, do you change your training a little bit for cardio, or do you stick with maybe some long-distance running or more wind sprints or just actual training in the gym? What do you do about cardio?
I work with Dynamic Fitness, Brian Richardson and Kevin Duanis, and they have it down to a science. They know, depending on how far away I am from the fight, what I should be doing, how much I should be lifting, how many reps I should be doing, and they'll know from 1 week to the next week what I should be doing. If I have a sprained toe on one day, they'll say, okay, we're going to do the same basic idea, but I want you to rotate this that way. They've just got it down to the point where they're as good as they get, and they've got the repertoire of fighters to prove it. Virgil Zwickers and Bellator, Jesse Taylor's fighting for the World Series of Fighting title. Tarek Safadine, he retired the Strikeforce champion. He just made his big debut. Dan Henderson, they have world title after world title under their name as far as conditioning goes. That's why I don't get tired in fights. It's been a long time since I felt winded. And it's thanks to Dynamic Fitness.
Yeah, now, do they have you doing, like, little short bursts, like high-intensity cardio or more a little more long-distance stuff, or did they mix it up a bit?
They mix it up, depending on the week, depending on the day. They'll mix it up. They'll make sure I can punch for an hour and a half if I need to. They know the sport. They know what typically happens in the sport, how hard a sprint is for 5 minutes, how hard it is. You know, a sprint is great, but a sprint when somebody's climbing on you is completely different. And they do the best to simulate all of that. And they've tested it on some of the best fighters in the world. And, look, Tarek Safadine could go 25 minutes is nothing. He could go an hour and a half if you needed him to.
Wow. And see, that's an example of how this sport has evolved from the old days. Because I know, Sam, you're probably a student of some of those days, going back to UFC 1. And back then, I mean, I have all the respect in the world for those guys in those days. I mean, it was exciting when that stuff came along. But now, the level of just strength and conditioning, I mean, now everyone's a professional athlete. If you're not training correctly and training hard, forget about it. It's over. Whereas back in those days, guys came in, I know from the traditional martial arts background, a lot of times back when I started, way back when, everything back then, don't worry about cardio. Well, just these deadly strikes will end it real quick. Well, we know in a real fight it's not that simple.
And
the cardio, the conditioning now is Olympic level, professional.
Look at the fight that's coming up, tomorrow, Lombard versus Shields. Lombard, I think he's a favorite, and I think he should rightfully be the favorite. But it wouldn't surprise me if he gasses himself in the first round and Shields submits him in the second or third. Well, it's Shields, so maybe not submit him, but lay on him for 15 minutes for the second two rounds. And win that way. Honestly, Lombard is one of the heaviest hitters in the UFC, but his cardio is questionable. So I think it's a great fight. I'm really looking forward to seeing that one.
Yeah, and it is interesting because, Hector's so muscular, but a lot of times those big muscles don't really help you out too much in a fight. Those big muscles need fed, and they take a lot of oxygen. And I guess the question would be that if cardio is continually a problem, is it just a genetic thing, or is it a matter of changing your whole approach to training? And I would think that at the very least he should try that. But
Hector's got such a big record. The way he does it, I guess it works for him. It wouldn't work for me. I'm a little more high energy with everything I do. But for him, he usually doesn't need to test how good his cardio is.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's whatever works. I mean, every fighter knows what's best for them in their training, what feels right. But I think you have a good point there that sometimes, and we've seen this in boxing quite a bit, with a lot of the heavy hitters that come out, and if they don't get you in the first couple rounds, and all of a sudden round 6, round 8, round 10, that's at that point, if you've really been that tired, you can't even keep your arms up. So, we'll see how it goes.
Yep.
And, Sam, you obviously have a little bit of a unique perspective on the TRT situation since you've worked with Dan. What's your thoughts on that starting to be banned everywhere?
Honestly, it never bothered me if anybody was on TRT or more. I mean, good and well most of the fighters are, and I would say most. More than 50% of them are on something. And it doesn't. It really doesn't bother me at all. I have fought guys who were, I can't prove anything, but they were on something or a lot of something. And I beat them just as easily as I'd beat people that weren't on it. It helps, I guess, but not enough for me to think it makes a difference.
Yeah, actually, I think there has been a list out there for years of all the people who have been popped for different things and what the results of their fights were that they got caught for, using. And I think it's got to be like 80 to 90% of them lost. So that should tell you something.
Yeah, probably.
Anyway, Wes Swofford is your opponent coming up here at the event. What do you know about him?
I know he's taller than me, and I hate fighting people taller than me. It drives me nuts. And it's usually not the case. I'm 6'2". It's a pretty good sized, middleweight. But he's taller than me, so I got to figure out how to play with that. He hits pretty hard. We've got a common opponent, and he beat him in eighth of the time it took me to beat him, winning Jay Silva. So I've got my work cut out for me, but I've got a very good camp going with me. A couple of my teammates are fighting right around the same time, So it's, you know, I'm ready.
Well, we're going to keep you on until he was scheduled to be on at 9:15, but you've covered so much so far, I don't think we're going to have 15 more minutes of content. So what I'm going to do is I'm just going to hit record on my separate recorder here, and I want you to just give Wes a little message for when he gets on, and we'll play it for him.
Okay.
What's your message for Wes?
Wes the Nile. You know, back in high school, I actually got West Nile, and I beat it. And so come May 9th, I'll be beating West Nile again.
All right. Well, this time it's not a virus, though. It's an actual human being, right?
Yeah.
I'll play that. And as far as... is there anybody out there you want to give a shout-out to or thank or say hello to?
Hey, I got to thank Team Quest. I got to thank Dynamic Fitness. A to Z Flooding has been there in my corner for a while now. And if anyone ever wants to check anything out on me, I go to samalvey.com. I've got my own website up. It's always going to kind of stay up to date and inform you what I've got going, when my next fight is. And sometimes, you know, a thought of the day might pop up there. And my beautiful wife, she's wonderful. I couldn't do it without her. I mean, literally couldn't. She's my head corner. And so she's just wonderful.
Oh, that's cool. I don't see that. I don't think that often. Usually the wife is either in the audience looking away every time you get punched or at home crying her eyes out or something.
The nope, she's been there every one of my fights, amateur and professional.
All right, well, you got any final thoughts before we let you go?
No, I think you guys just about picked my brain clean.
Well, it's been great chatting with you. You definitely sound like you got a good head on your shoulders and you're headed in the right direction, and we wish you luck in this fight. Sound like
well, thank you so much.
Yeah, good luck, Sam. We'll certainly be looking forward to it, and I know you're training hard, you're doing all the right stuff, and I know you're going to be putting on a great show.
All right, I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Smiling Sam Alvey, headed for a big showdown. MF40 with Wes Swofford, known here at 9:15. And we have so much to cover. It's actually kind of good we've been able to get a few more minutes here to shock off or check off the items on the list here. UFC Fight Night 38. I don't think I'm going to go through the entire card, but we should at least talk about the top three or four fights here. Of course, Alexander Ferguson won the main event by TKO. I actually didn't watch any of this. One of those overseas cards that I forgot was at a different time, so totally missed it. But I think the bigger story than Gustafsson taking out Manila was Michael Johnson beating Melvin Clark in the co-main event. And I did watch that. That was a decision. Johnson looked pretty good, but Gillard really didn't engage as much as he used to. So I think a lot of people that were very impressed with Johnson really didn't see the kind of fight that should have impressed him. So, you know, obviously Johnson did a great job, pace, and you know, pressed the action when he had to. But you know, I would have liked to have seen him some competition that would have tried to press the action just as much and would have made it a more even fight. Even Dana White said Melvin Gillard ran, though. It's not even in his nature. I don't think I've ever seen a fight where he ran like that. I don't necessarily agree with that terminology. I don't think he's trying to fight a smart fight. No, it seemed more like a boxing match. Because I don't like watching boxing, but not when I'm tuning in trying to watch MMA. And of course, Gustafsson's win is starting to talk again about his potential rematch there with John Jones. I think they've already made the decision that Gustafsson will face the winner of Teixeira. And Danny will have to wait for the winner of Gustafsson versus Jones or Teixeira. It's looking like Don Jones is going to have a lot of people waiting in line for a little while to try to get that title. And also on this card, we had Matt Pickett versus Neil Seary. Pickett won by unanimous decision. We had Gunnar Nelson beat Omari Akhmedov by guillotine choke submission. And Ilir Lekipi Cyril Nibate by guillotine choke submission first round. And Nibate is actually retired now. He just decided to sit after that fight. So that was kind of a milestone fight there. Luke Barnett, a guy I've interviewed before for AMAG, he won over Matt Nielsen. Got to fight in his home country. So to get that win. It was a TKO from hit kick and punches in the first round. 324 mark. So great for him. And of course we got to talk about UFC 171. Which I've been actually discussed a little bit with Sam. But the main event there is Johnny Hendricks facing Robbie Lawler. I gotta like Robbie in this one, even though Hendricks looked really big against GSP.
So you think Lawler's gonna pull it off, huh?
Definitely. I think that Lawler has more brawling style. That I think GSP is more of a boxer when he's striking, when he's on the feet, and Robbie has a little bit more power and just aggressive. So I think that's going to work against Hendricks.
Well, I guess right now it looks like the old Lawler has come back, but he's going to have a steep hill to climb. I mean, Johnny so far has had a very good chin, and he's awful hard to get down. And I think that if Robbie does get him in trouble, I would think Johnny would have a slight edge on the ground, is my feeling. So we'll have a gentleman's disagreement here on that, okay, for 10 push-ups.
All right.
Wow. But either way, I think that Johnny, one thing I would caution him on is I know he still is talking about St. Pierre somewhat, and I think that in one of the press conferences he was saying, well, once I get the belt, hopefully George will have a few more fights and we'll do it again. And I just don't think that's the right mindset to approach when you're fighting Robbie Lawler, because Robbie does have that kind of power that, you know, I mean, one punch can change things around quick. I think Johnny would be well served to focus on what's coming Saturday night.
Well, I think that's just a byproduct of you know, him being asked so many questions about that fight. He's got to kind of have a chip on his shoulder about that whole situation.
But wouldn't you say that a better answer would be, you know, something? Ask me that Sunday, okay? Ask me that after the Lawler fight. Reminds me of Dan Severn before UFC 9. They're interviewing him in the dressing room, and they said, "What are your plans?" He said, ask me that in 2 hours. So, I think he looked at his watch and said that, you know.
We also have some contenders in Carlos Condit and Tyron Woodley in the co-main event here.
And that one could turn into, I mean, it seems like the top three fights all have fight of the night potential here. On paper, I've got to go with Carlos simply because of the quality of his opposition. But the counter argument to that is his Achilles heel, assuming he has one, has been strong, powerful wrestlers. And I would not underestimate Tyrone Woodley's wrestling skills. So this could be a barn burner.
Two co-main events here have the theme of kind of a UFC insider versus outsider, because Woodley and Lawler both come from Strikeforce ranks. So I think we've yet to see really anybody really run away with their time in the UFC and just, you know, blow through guys that come from other leagues. There's very few exceptions to that rule. So I think it would be nice actually to see one of these Strikeforce guys win one of these fights, just for that fact, to show that they can hang. And then we have Jake Shields versus Hector Lombard, which is kind of two outsiders. still haven't really totally established themselves with the UFC. But Hector's been disappointing in the beginning of his UFC career. So he really needs this win, and Shields has the experience to hang with him, but I just don't know if he has the strength, like you mentioned. Guard is pretty jacked, so to get to hold you or hit you hard enough, he's going to be lights out or fight over. And then we have Diego Sanchez versus Miles Jury.
Wow.
Jury's undefeated at 13-0. Diego's 24-6, but he's an animal. And,
I would say so far, Miles Jury has not shown any weakness whatsoever. I mean, he's got great boxing. His ground game is first class. His conditioning seems like he's come back from his ACL tear quite well. But now Diego maybe is not the same phenom that he was 7-8 years ago, but he still brings it. I wouldn't put him in the gatekeeper category either, because there's an old George Shavallo phrase: after he lost to George Foreman in 1970, and it kind of became obvious to even diehard fans like myself that maybe he wasn't going to ever be the champ. And he was asked if he was going to keep going, and I remember his answer was, "You're only as good as your last fight." And my point is about this, that if Diego pulls this off against Miles Jury, he's right back in the mix. But I think it's a very important fight for him to win. So we'll see how it goes. This could be a barn burner, another one.
And we've got a few Ultimate Fighter alumni on this card. The first one, the top fight of those alums is Kelvin Gaplin. Still undefeated at 7-0. He'll be fighting Rick Story, who's 16-7. Very tough guy, very tough opponent. I think Gaston can handle him, but never know. Then we have Raquel Bennington. She didn't win her season. This female season there, she made a lot of fans, and she impressed a lot of people, and she can be very tough in her own right. But actually, she's got pretty much the least amount of fights on the full card. Probably actually the worst record, but I'm not going to say anything that, because this is a hell of a card.
Yeah.
She's 4-3 officially, fighting Jessica Andrade, who's 10-3. So it's definitely a big step up for her, and if she wins, she's definitely sticking around, but if she loses, she's probably going to have at least one more fight before they throw her out, if they do. So probably a lot of pressure on her to compete really well here, if not to get the win, which would probably be seen as an upset, seeing as Andre has so many more fights. And then we have Dennis Bermudez, 12-3, fighting Jim Hinney. That's a good match there. Logan St. Preux, 14-5, fighting Nikita Krylov, 16-3. We got Alex Garcia, 11-1, fighting Sean Spencer, 11-2. And another guy I interviewed for that magazine article, Bubba McDaniel's back. Which is surprising. I didn't think he did well enough to keep his job there the last few fights. But he's 21-7, and he's fighting Sean Strickland, who's 13-0. So I would think this is the big gatekeeper fight for him. See if he's going to stick around. Strickland, his first loss, and another win. I think Bubba's going to be here to stay for a while. But they don't put you in against an undefeated guy like that unless they want to see what you can prove. So I think that's going to be a big fight for both guys. Then we've got Will Campuzano, 13-5, fighting Justin Scoggins, who's undefeated at 8-0. Rene Forte, 8-3, fighting Anthony Trevino, or Francisco Trevino. He's also undefeated at 11-0. And we've got finally the first fight of the night, Dana, 18-10, fighting Robert, 10-2. So let's just count up the undefeated fighters on this. We got 3 in the preliminaries alone. We got 4, 1 of these, that one, 5. 5 undefeated fighters on this card. Pretty impressive.
So somebody's O must go, huh?
Maybe more than one.
Yeah.
And finally, for the MMA events this weekend, which probably should not forget to mention third match between Daniel Strauss and Cap Curran, headlining Bellator 12 from Indiana. The horseshoe casino out there. Tomorrow night, Strauss is 22-4, Pat Curran is 19-5. They've split their past two fights. I did watch Strauss's win in their last bout. But you never know. I mean, these guys have both had one win in this one, and, you know, it all depends on what fighter shows up.
Right, and it's just up to the Curran to adjust his strategy a bit, but he's going to have his hands full because Strauss is, you know, Strauss came up through the local organization around here, the NAAFS, and I've seen him for a long time. And when his game is on, I mean, his cardio is insane, and he's got a lot of physicality with his wrestling, and just likes to throw people around and control them like he did with Curran in that fight. So Jeff's going to have to come up with a counter to that. But I'm not saying he can't do it. I mean, he's done it before, but he's got to be on his A game tomorrow night for sure.
And the co-main event there is Cristiano Souza, 7-0, versus Sam Oropeza, who's 10-2. Third fight broadcast is Jesse Warren fighting Adam McDonough, 9-0. And we also have Andre Korostov fighting Marshall Bell, who's 10-3. Yes. There's two Adam McDonoughs on this card? That's got to be a misprint. Unless he's having two fights in one night.
That can't be.
We've got the same 9-0 here record for this guy in the eighth fight of the night, fighting Mark Scanlon instead of Jesse Warren. So I don't know what's going on there. I think Sherdog's got something to fix on that one. And then we have Paul Bradley, 21-5, versus Nathan Coy, 13-4. AJ Matthews, 6-2, fighting Bilal Muhammad, who's 4-0. And Diego Marlin, 24-8, fighting Rob Menegas, he's 6-1. Darian Caldwell, 3-0, versus Lance Serna, 2-0. Derek Laffer, 6-2, versus Bobby Reardon, he's 8-12. Jason Guida, 19-27, versus Anthony Gomez, 7-2. And Eric Correa versus Daniel James, Correa's 2-0, James is 0-0. That's it for the big MMA fights. And we're about 2 minutes from getting the next guest on. Oh, looks like he's already been moving. Whoops. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Wes.
Yeah, this is Wes Wofford.
Oh, sorry, we had you on hold. I thought we were on for 9:15.
I guess I'm early.
Early for the fight. So I wanted to get this out of the way. We asked, we're going to try to keep Sam on so he can just back and forth, but we did the next best thing. We had him record a little message for you, so let's play that one and respond to it.
Okay.
That's what he said. He beat Wes Nile in high school. Now he's going to beat you.
Is that right? I didn't hear anything. But that's funny. That's good stuff, man. Sam's always got good jokes, you know.
So what's your message for him? He's still up.
My message for Sam, you know, it's kind of like what I was, you know, talking with Scott Zur about. You know, this fight speaks for itself. You know, I know I'm not the household, the big name like Sam Alvey is, but if you look me up, stylistically, it's just going to be a fun fight for everybody. Sam's just a guy who likes to get in there and fight, and so do I. I like to get in there and bang and go for the knockout. You know, I just say bring it. That's really all I got to say about that.
You know, Wes, there's an old saying that styles make fights, and I know that both you guys do like to bring it, and I'm really looking forward to a great show, and I know you'll both give it.
Awesome, awesome. Thanks a lot. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. That sounds about right.
And Wes, give us a little rundown of how you got into the fight game in the first place.
How I got into the fight game? You know, I just saw it on TV, and I thought the guys were nuts, and I was like, man, you know, this looks pretty crazy. I think I might want to try it to see how I do. And you know, a little bit of a wrestling background and a little bit of amateur boxing, and I thought, you know, what the heck. And I trained for about a year or so, mixed martial arts, and had my first fight, and was successful, and just kind of fell in love, and, you know, it just kind of snowballed from there.
And what do you like most about the sport of mixed martial arts?
What I love the most is it's just surprises. I don't know. Anybody, anytime, any given day, one punch can change a fight. You know, I love the excitement of it, the competition, just everything. The energy from the crowd, the getting your hand raised. There's nothing like getting your hand raised after knocking somebody out, the crowd, and hearing the crowd and the cameras. And, you know, it's a truly an unbelievable experience and feeling. Nothing like it.
How about a favorite? Do you have a favorite style, a submission, or strike that you like to use a lot? Any kind of signature move?
Anything that puts them to sleep. I'd say, you know, submission. I always like the triangle choke. Triangle's a good one for the submission. But as far as punches, anyone that lands, whether it's an elbow or a hook or a knee, you know, that's all good stuff.
As long as it works.
As long as it works. As long as it gets the job done.
There you go.
And what's the most important thing you do to get ready for a fight like this?
Like this? Just the obvious factor in the, you know, the southpaws. This whole camp, we've already been drilling it since I got the first, you know, the first word on the fight is everyone I'm going with is southpaw, obviously that's a big part of preparation and cardio like crazy. You know, the 5-round fight, that's one thing, you know, besides a little bit of the experience as far as the MMA goes, Alvey's got the championship rounds. He's been there. I haven't been there yet. So that's something that we're obviously not looking past. It's something we're addressing. So, you know, southpaws and cardio.
Well, you don't have to worry about the championship rounds if you don't get to them. If you take them out,
that's
before
good
then.
Too. That's always fun too.
You know, Wes. Speaking of cardio, do you have a particular way of building your cardio? I mean, do you do more like old-fashioned long-distance running or more sprints or just a lot of training technique in the gym? Or how do you go about your cardio preparation?
You know, my coach has got sick, twisted ways. He loves to come up with ways of torturing us in the gym. You know, one of the last things we had to do was one of the last training camps. We had to get down the big heavy bags off the chains, the big tall ones, you know, do ground and pound on the bag, and then we'd do spin drills around the bag with the ground and pound and knees and elbows, and we'd have to pick the bags up, run around and try and knock each other over. and that's after we doing rounds of sparring and everything else. We have five-minute rounds of picking these big bags up, running around with them, and trying to knock our partners over. We can barely stand up. But, you know, we mix it up with a lot of stuff like that, and, you know, besides doing the rounds, getting guys in on you every 2.5 minutes, fresh guys in while you're, you know, staying in, you know, all the running, all the jump roping, all the, you know, all that type of circuit training.
It sounds like you've got the right approach there, because it's, you know, I think that we keep coming up with new ideas, but I think the old ones are still good, too, because if you look at the history of boxing, these guys back in the old days went out and did more long-distance running, and they didn't have any trouble going 15 rounds.
Yeah.
So I think it's good to come up with the new stuff, and I love that drill you were just describing. You know, my God, that's I'm tired hearing about it. But I think that it's good to kind of keep a blend of the old and new like that. So it sounds like you got it going pretty good there. And I know that, like when I was training, if one of the guys in our gym was getting ready for a fight and he's out there and everyone just lines up, and then you've got 3 minutes with him, and then he doesn't get much rest, and then there's another guy coming, and that kind of stuff is just, it's got to be horrible. But it's even worse in the real fight. So, you know, that's a great way to get ready.
Absolutely, absolutely. I'm looking forward to either way. You know, I'd love to just put on a great show for 5 rounds and have a good stand up war the whole time. I've only got that one time my fight career so far, but you know, and that was just the standard 3 rounds. So, but you know, I always welcome the quick knockout, and that's good too.
Yeah, well, I think the attitude's got to be, you've got to be prepared to go where the fight takes you. And
absolutely.
If it's on the ground, it's on the ground. If it's a stand-up battle and it's going even, it's going there. If it's over in 30 seconds or if it goes 25 minutes. But let me ask you this too, Wes. On the ground, do you feel that your strategy is more of a jiu-jitsu submission-based approach, or do you prefer like a more aggressive wrestling style and ground and pound? What do you think?
You know, my style in the gym is more of a when I'm training for fights, and it's more of the wrestling. It's more of the dominant. That's the role I try and play: aggressive, getting the fight to the ground, working on that. I'm comfortable on my feet. That's where I want to be. So I need to get it down on the mat. Work the areas where I haven't had the success. I was actually training for a title fight here locally when I got the call for the Sam Alvey fight, and I was just training. I was training at a jiu-jitsu academy at the Amazonas, the Rice Brothers Jiu-Jitsu. Now, if you've ever heard of the Rice Brothers, I'd suggest looking those guys up. They're just phenomenal, and they're right here in Redding. So I was training with those guys, and yeah, I mean, their jiu-jitsu is just incredible. So you got the Alvey, call for the Alvey fight, and obviously it's a totally different fight. And I'm still working with these guys, still working on the ground. It's just not it's not something that I've seen a lot, and, you know, fans and stuff have seen in a lot of my fights, is I like to keep it on the feet. But I'm having fun on the ground too, learning, so.
Yeah, that's it. I think the key is to try to be really super good at one thing and then just not have any weaknesses in the other things, at least be competent with it. You know, whether you're on your back or whether you're getting, you know, on the more of a dominant position or whatever, or just take down defense, getting back in your feet, whatever. Just be decent at it and then go to work on the feet.
Well, you know, especially with nowadays, these guys, I mean, it's unbelievable. Those games change, you know. These guys have been doing jiu-jitsu or wrestling since they're 7 years old, and they're, you know, and I mean, it's an incredible level that it is now, you know.
It's just amazing. I mean, I know back in the early days, guys would come along and they were from one background, and I'm sure, I don't know how old you are, Wes, but I mean, you're probably a student of the game anyways, and I'm sure you've probably got some of the old early day fights, the old school stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember those days, everyone came from either maybe like a boxing background or kickboxing or, of course, jiu-jitsu back in the 90s was, the Hoist Gracie got that whole thing started. And then when the wrestlers came on with Mark Coleman's and Dan Severn's. But my point being, everyone came from another base. Now you see these young guys coming up, and my God, they've been doing this stuff since they were 8, 9, 10 years old, and they're training everything. It's just amazing evolution of the sport. I mean, and it seems like every 2 years we get a whole new generation coming in. Just you wonder where it's going to go from here.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy to see in another 10 years or another. Yeah, I mean, it's only going up.
Yeah, and you just got to keep going with it. You know, the old saying, adapt or perish.
That's right.
So, Wes, can you give us an idea of what your ultimate goal is in MMA?
Ultimate goal? You know, I just take it one fight at a time and do it because I love it. And you know, I'm in, obviously trying to take care of my family while I'm doing it as best I can. So, just that, I guess, you know, just take it one fight at a time, and as long as my body allowed me to do it and I'm still being successful and people want to see me fight, I'm going to keep going.
And how about favorite fighters? You got anybody that you really have to watch every time they fight?
There's so many. There's really so many. Alexander Gustafsson, I knew he was going to be great. When I saw him first coming, when he fought Phil Davis, and even though he got put to sleep in that fight, I knew with his takedown defense, with his stand-up, and I mean, Phil Davis being the wrestler that he is, and Gustafsson having, that giant height and everything, and his takedown defense, and just the way he performed in that fight, being his first UFC fight, coming in, I think it was 11-0 or 12-0 or something, and I knew he was going to be great, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he does next. Love watching that guy fight. Put it to John Jones. I want to see him and John Jones again.
Yeah, everybody does.
Yeah, yeah.
I wasn't one of the ones who thought Gustafsson won the first fight, but it was obviously very close. He did put him in the hospital, so I was really surprised to make an immediate rematch on that one, but I guess both guys needed a break from each other after that.
Yeah, you know, I can. If that's the case, you know, I can understand that. I definitely think that, you know, you look at it from from the outside, and it's everyone else gets a friggin' immediate rematch. You're like, where's this guy? I can understand if it was a mutual thing, but I think he deserved it. I think he earned it. You know, maybe he didn't. You know, I was rooting for Gustafsson, and I had it Jones. You know, I had Jones 3-2, but still the damage that he did and how well and composed he was, and I mean, no one's been able to even get close to that against Jones.
Exactly. And if you think about it, before the fight, what were the odds? It was something like minus 900 or something. I mean, it was something ridiculous with Gus. And I think that, I had it actually 3-2 for Gus, but I wouldn't argue with you at all because one or two of those rounds were so close, and there's a little cliche, you got to beat the champ. So
exactly.
I have no problem with the decision, but let's get him in there and do it again, assuming that Jones gets past Glover, which is not a given.
True. Yes, true.
I don't think you can look past anyone nowadays.
No, absolutely not.
So, Wes, as far as fighting for the MFC, what do you like best about the promotion and fighting up there in Canada?
You know, they just treat you great over there. Canada's just full of nice people, and it's just they just take care of you. The exposure, obviously, is huge. The opportunity they're giving me is huge. It's fun to just to to fight out of the country as well. I mean, there's a lot of pluses. There's a lot of things I really like about the organization and fighting over there. You know, it's not 9 hours ahead like fighting in Poland. You know, it's only a couple hours, an hour or so time difference. So, you know, so pretty good.
Is there anybody out there you really want to fight? Not that you're going to be looking past Sam, but is there anybody out there you really have wanted to fight for a while and would like to get an opportunity to?
You know, there was a guy here, a local fight I was looking at getting, you know, getting my belt back here in Rogue. But, you know, I'd like – how about another shot at Trevor Smith, you know? He's in the UFC now. He gave me my first loss back in Sport Fight. And, you know, he's doing well right now in the UFC. But I'd like another shot at him.
All right. Anybody you want to give a shout-out to or say hello to out there?
Sam Alvey, I'm coming for you. I'm gonna have a frowny face shaved in the back of my head.
That's good.
Turn that smile upside down, huh?
Yeah, I'm gonna do it. You gotta have fun. You gotta have fun. He'll like it too. He'll smile. I guarantee it.
Well, he smiles about everything.
I know.
You get himself a guy all day, and he's smiling through the whole thing. I think that's what kind of made him a fan favorite. It really surprised me that the UFC didn't pick him up just for the, you know, the character aspect when he was on The Ultimate Fighter.
Yeah,
that was,
you know, definitely. I was thinking the same thing.
All right. Well, you got any final thoughts before we let you go here?
Well, May 9th, don't blink. Tune in. Have some fun.
We're excited, Wes. It should be a great fight, and best of luck to you.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, and sorry about that first week we were supposed to have you on. We had some technical difficulties there, so we didn't end up doing the show at all.
Oh, whatever.
Thanks for the patience, and
yeah.
We'll be tuning in.
All right, absolutely. Have a good, guys.
Take it easy. So there you have it, the two competitors there, and like Dave said, if you want to see these guys in the main event, what it said is you got to put MFC, hashtag MFC, hashtag MFC40, and hashtag Gilweight on Twitter.
You know, guys, to my knowledge, this is the first time we've had this format where we've had both competitors on in the same night. This is kind of unique.
Yeah, and the guys at MFC obviously have been reaching out to us after I contacted them, giving us all these opportunities. So we got to thank them. Obviously, Mark Pavlich, we had on a few weeks ago.
Yeah, this is great.
I always like these promotions that try to do things a little differently and come up with good ideas like loading on the main event. You hear these guys, like Scott last week is the PR guy. He's obviously got a great head on his shoulders and he's doing the right things there. And these fighters that we talked to tonight, I mean, they have nice things to say about the promotion. And it's not the type of promotion that forces you to do that either, like the UFC sometimes.
There seems to be a real degree of professionalism about everyone involved in this so far.
And I think that has a lot to do with the design of it to begin with. I mean, they want it to be something different, and they are. And they're doing a good job up there. And we definitely wish them more success. Anyway, we do got to get this unboxing tonight. I'm sure Tony's twiddling his thumbs over there pretty bored. He's still with us. Tony,
I'm still here. I haven't gone anywhere.
Oh, I thought you would be used to fight.
Okay, so Tony, I've been waiting all day to talk to you about this, okay? I was on Yahoo today, and there was an article about Pacquiao, and supposedly he's really, really training hard, and he's out in L.A. with Freddie Roach now, And there was, Justin Fortane, I believe, am I pronouncing his name right, that the guy that fought Lennox Lewis, but he's a strength and conditioning guy now. Yeah, and I guess he's just been working Manny hard, and supposedly the key is aggression. Because Manny felt when he fought Bradley the first time, he said, well, why should I jab? I'm just going to miss. But Roach is trying to get him back on that. But assuming that he's able to knock out Bradley, do you see a possibility of a Mayweather fight? And if so, do you think that it'll be hyped enough to give, you know, to really build it up like it should have been a couple years ago? What do you think?
Well, good question. If he knocks out Bradley, or if he really beats him impressively. Now, the last fight with Timothy Bradley, I remember watching the 24/7 behind the scenes all access build up, and it was really more of a show of Pacquiao's outside of the ring commitments. I think at one point, like, he was flying somewhere or he's making an appearance somewhere. And I remember even before the fight, he was having problems with his calves. So I remember it took him like an extra 15 minutes to fight start because he had to go to another room and get like stretched out on some machine. That was a Pacquiao that was not focused. So if he comes out and he avenges this loss and he really blasts Timothy Bradley out of there, you could make an argument that he has regained some, or a lot of, maybe not all, of the momentum he had a couple years ago. Because, don't forget, there was also that devastating one-punch knockout loss in there. So that still puts him at the B side of this equation.
Right.
Say he had the loss to Bradley, and say he beat Marquez. You know, maybe he beat him by decision. You know, it wasn't overwhelming. It was a good fight. He clearly won, but it wasn't, like, the greatest fight ever.
Mm-hmm.
And then you could say, okay, the Bradley fight was a bad decision. He took the guy lightly. He still won 11 of the 12 rounds relatively convincingly, but it was a bad decision. Then a convincing knockout win brings that luster back, and it brings him saying, Pacquiao Mayweather. You gotta see it. I can't wait. I think the loss to Marquez is more of a detriment to this than the loss to Bradley.
Yes, because that was legitimate. That loss to Marquez, I don't care what you say, that was a legitimate KO.
Mm-hmm. So he's always gonna be on the B side of this, and I've read a few more things recently that have been very negative towards Bob Arum on Top Rank. And actually, from a surprising source, Mike Tyson.
Well, remember, now Mike's a competitor now, too. Okay.
Well, but this came from... I've been skimming through Mike's book that I got myself. I'm going to take it with me on vacation. I'm going to take it with me when I go to Vegas next month. Maybe I'll see if I can get him to sign it. How awesome would that be? But I also read a review on it in one of the latest Ring magazines. And it talks about some of the inaccuracies in the book, you know, because obviously you get a guy that's been pushing the head a lot of times, and Mike's never been the sharpest tool anyway. But one of the things he said in there was Customato, if he still had lived, likely still would have signed with Don King, because as slimy as a snake as Don King was, Cus hated Bob Arum that much more.
Wow.
Well, that's too, because that's been the number one roadblock to Floyd Mayweather fighting me.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I said a couple of years ago, and we said this, Tom, I'm not sure if you were on the show at the time or not. It was a couple of years ago, and this is when we had Al Bernstein on there. It was right after, I think, Pacquiao just beat up Margarito real bad. I think that was the fight. It was either the Cotto fight or the Margarito fight. It might have been the Cotto fight. And we were talking about it, and Stephen Al at the time came out and said, I can't see this fight happening. And this is when this was the fight. This is before, you had, even before you had the previous unimpressive Manny Pacquiao performances, the one against Shane Mosley that was kind of ho-hum, and some of those fights. This is when he was red hot. And Al Bernstein was like, I can't see it happening. And the two scenarios that we said that were the big hole, the big roadblocks, one was the promotions. Floyd Mayweather refuses to work with Bob Arum, and Pacquiao is, with an ironclad contract to him. That was one, and that's a big one. And second of all, it was almost ego-based, where it's, and I always use the names Ray Leonard and Thomas Hearns, because back in the day when they were the two number one welterweights, and that was a fight to be clamored for, it happened. And you're right. There's a big risk, but a big reward at the same time. The big reward is not just a lot of money, but the fact that you become, an uber legend almost. You become a top player like you wouldn't believe. But at the same time, if you lose, your luster goes down majorly, especially a guy like Floyd Mayweather that loves that zero at the end of his record. He loses.
Yeah.
Now he can't just say, I'm the best of all time. Right now he's saying, I'm the best of all time, the best ever. Better than Ali, better than Sugar Ray Robinson, better than, Sugar Ray Leonard, better than all these guys, better than Roberto Duran. All these top like guys. He's saying, I'm the best ever. If he loses, he's not just not the best ever, he's not even the best of his generation.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I mean,
it's reward.
Yeah, I know you guys have heard me talk about this generation versus generation thing. I think it's just one of those crazy debates that we'll never really get anywhere with it. I just kind of leave it alone and say, hey, the best of yesterday would be doing good today, and take today's guys back, put them back, they'd be doing good too. I leave it at that. But your point's very well taken, that there's probably more for Mayweather to lose than for Pacquiao. But I guess Pacquiao, like you said, if this is a convincing knockout, and this is a gigantic if. I mean, Bradley's not an easy guy to knock out. But assuming that Manny pulls that off, and then I guess the promotion would be, hey, I went on a streak there where I lost my focus. I had too many things going on outside of the ring. Right now I'm back. All I'm thinking of is Mayweather, and maybe we could put it together, because I would say on the plus side for the fight that Manny has some fanatical fans. He has one of the most fanatical fan bases in the sport. I think all of us can agree on that. And a lot of people would still say, well, if not Manny, then who? Then who's going to come along?
Might happen. If it happens, I think it's going to be Floyd's very last fight. And the reason I think that is because I think Floyd's really always been waiting to watch to see when Manny's going to slow down, really noticeably slow down. And then I think he might jump on. The other thing is the only two openings I've heard in the media are from Floyd Mayweather Sr., who said that Manny's got to fight somebody that Floyd fought recently and do better. So, and you specifically mentioned Guerrero. So they used to do that all the time. It used to be like, one guy would fight somebody and then the other guy would fight him. And it was like almost always, common opponents, one after another, as if they were bound to fight each other at some point. And then that stopped happening. They started picking different opponents and, the conversation died down a lot. But the other opening was when when Floyd said that, I'll fight Manny if he signs on to my promotion and fights for me for a few fights, which is probably never going to happen. So I think he just kind of put that out there as a joke. And he has admitted, that the reason he hasn't signed to fight Manny yet has something to do with, his health. So he's obviously concerned that Manny could give him a test. So I really think that in his perspective, he knows he's a fresher fighter because he's taken time off. He actually retired for over a year. He was in jail for 90 days. And he's had a very different path the last few years than Manny's had. Manny's been constantly fighting. And Floyd pretty much picks and chooses, maybe fights twice a year at most, and gets the matchup he wants and does all the promotional stuff and really doesn't have as many worries as Manny. I mean, look at Manny. He's got the tax situation. He's got, you know, losing to Marquez there, the controversial decision to Bradley. He's had a lot of stressful experiences in addition to the boxing.
Yeah, plus trying to feed, trying to feed his entourage and support his wife's political campaign. Huh. Yeah, that's a full plate.
So I really do think that it's possible. I'm not going to hold my breath for it, but if it is going to happen, I would think Manny and Floyd would save it for Floyd's very last fight.
Okay, but then, now here's another question. If Floyd is insisting that Manny fights under his banner, well, isn't Manny still contractually with Bob Arum, or how long does that contract last? Do you guys know?
I have no idea. I have not.
I don't know, honestly, either. And I don't know if even a co-promotion would work here, just because of the bad blood between Mayweather and Arum and Golden Boy and Arum. I mean, you know, Oscar De La Hoya had a lot of, you know, negative comments over the years regarding his former promoter.
Huh.
Arum, you know, Don King, you can say a lot of things about Don King. What I've seen out of Don King is, and especially maybe as he's started to fall to maybe number three in the promotions, when he used to be number one, he's become more flexible. Don, back in the day, used to be a guy like, when he had Tyson and Tyson was at his peak, to get a fight with Tyson, you not only had to sign under King's promotion, but you had to guarantee if you won, he got basically your contract for your next three fights.
Right, I remember that. Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, but yeah, I was about to say, because that's what Holyfield happened when he had that upset win over Tyson. And speaking of that, it's 15 years ago today, that horrendous decision in the first fight with Lennox Lewis.
Yeah.
Saw somebody post that on Facebook. You know what? It made me think. You know how, like, sometimes it's funny how things work out in the fight game? We were, the night of that fight, Lewis, Holyfield, just get off on a quick tangent. We were going over a friend of my dad's, I should say, to watch the fight. And the two things I remember about that fight, except for the fight really stinking and the judging being horrible, was that the guy had the best peel-and-eat shrimp I've ever had. They were so big, they were about the size of small lobster tails. And we would watch a lot of pay-per-view fights together back around that time. Either we would get them at my house, or one of my dad's friends would get them, or another friend would get them, and we'd always go over, and we'd all bring food and, you know, have a good time, bring some beers. Never did we ever have scorecards. That night, as we're getting ready for this fight, we go over there, and the one guy came over and goes, "Hey, I brought some sheets of paper and a pen. I thought it would be fun if we judged the fight, all of us tonight, and did a comparison." We said, "Okay, sure, we'll do it." And who would have thought it would be one of the most controversial decisions in district?
Well, we got to move on here from fights that might happen to fights that are happening this weekend. And we started to go through some boxing matchups here. We talked about a couple fights, but here's one I didn't expect to talk about. But one of our recent guests tonight talked about fighting in Poland. Well, there is a fight card in Poland, boxing match, heavyweight match between a guy named Andrzej Walrusik, that was a Polish name, it's tough to pronounce, but he's 28-1 with 14 knockouts, and he's fighting Francois Botha, who I thought was a
wow.
But apparently,
48-10-3
with 29 knockouts, and that is the 10-round of main event there. And the rest of the card is full of names I probably will butcher if I even try to pronounce them.
Yeah.
And then the very next card here on BoxRec is, of course, the big one this weekend on Showtime from Puerto Rico. And the main event there is Danny Garcia, who is undefeated with 27 wins, 16 knockouts, fighting Mauricio Herrera, who has 20 wins with only 7 knockouts and 3 losses. And this is for the title of WBA Super World Welterweight Champion and WBC Light Welterweight Champion. Also, another undefeated fighter with all knockouts to his credit, Deontay Wilder, fighting at heavyweight. 30 wins, 30 knockouts, no losses, no draws, fighting Malik Scott, who has only 1 loss and 1 draw. That 1 loss was by knockout, though, so I like Deontay's chances there. And Scott has 36 wins with 13 knockouts. So that should be a pretty good set of co-main events there. I'm definitely going to be watching this one, even though I don't traditionally watch a lot of boxing these days. So I'm definitely going to be tuning in for this one. Also, we've got the third fight, a 10-round featherweight matchup between Juan Manuel Lopez, who's 33-3 with 30 knockouts as well. Fighting Daniel Ponce de Leon, who's 45-5-0. He's got 35 knockouts to his credit. So a lot of knockouts in the records of those three there, Wilder, Lopez, and de Leon. So thinking a couple of those fights might end early. Then we have Daniel Jacobs, 26-1 with 23 knockouts, fighting Milton Nunes, who's 26-9-1 with 24 knockouts. We've got Ramsey Gill, 8-8 with 5 draws and 5 knockout wins, fighting Jose A. Gonzalez, 22-1 with 17 knockouts. And we have Ed Paredes, just added today, 34-3-1 with 22 knockouts, fighting George Sosa, who's 13-6. All 13 wins coming up. So that's a pretty big one. We do have a couple other fights worth mentioning. Maureen Shea is back in action up there in California. I actually just read a few weeks ago an article about her. She had what's called seasonal affective disorder. So she actually moved from New York to California. Now she's fighting out there in Oxnard, California on this card. The co-main event, 10-round featherweight fight. She's fighting for the interim WBO female featherweight title. She is 22-2 with 11 knockouts. She's fighting Diana Cordero, who's 13-4-1 with 9 knockouts. And I did read that since she's moved to California that seasonal disorder is pretty much gone by the wayside because it's pretty much one season out there and it's summer. So not much to be unhappy about there. We did talk about the Bethlehem, Pennsylvania card this Saturday, but I forgot to mention there's one fight on here that I didn't even talk about, wasn't even mentioned in the story for some reason. But it's Kermit Cintron coming back. He's 34-5-2 with 28 knockouts, and he's fighting Ronald Cruz in a 10-round welterweight fight. Cruz is 20-2 with 15 knockouts. Is it until Monday, I believe, as far as big cards. There's a big one in Boston I was going to try to go to. I was able to be able to make it. We've got Julian Williams on that card fighting Freddie Hernandez. Williams is undefeated with 1 draw, 14 wins, and 8 knockouts at light middleweight. Freddie Hernandez is 30-6 with 20 knockouts. We also have Jamie Kavanaugh, who's 15-1-1 with 7 knockouts, fighting Andre Navarro, who's 9-4-1 with 6 knockouts. We have another undefeated guy, Alexis Santos, fighting a 6-round heavyweight fight. He's 12-0 with 10 knockouts, fighting Sylvester Baron, who's 8-3 with 3 knockouts. We also have the Polish Prince, lightweight, fighting a 6-rounder. He's 18-0 with 4 knockouts, fighting Guillermo Sanchez, who's 13-10. And a guy that's been in the Battle of the Badges a few times, at least one time that I saw, Billy Traft. He's a Boston police officer. Came from my hometown of Dorchester. He's on the card. He's 3-0 as a pro now. And he's fighting Jose Brewer, who's 0-5. So I think Traft will probably not have a problem in that fight. that's about it. Until next week for boxing, upcoming boxing anyway. But we do have a bunch of little stories. Oh, looks like we lost Tom. Tom, you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Just got cut off somehow, but I'm back.
All right. And, Tony, here's a story for you. You're trying to get us to figure out how to contact Antonio Tarver.
Yeah, he's in trouble, too.
And, well, I guess we got to call the police.
Yeah.
Because he was arrested in Florida on a felony theft and bad check warrant stemming from unpaid IOUs at a Las Vegas Strip casino. And that's interesting because, like I said when I told you I couldn't find him, he doesn't have an official website out there anymore. Every official website he had is like really old and not doing anything, and there's no contact information. So anyway, he's been arrested, and he was stopped. It was a traffic stop that picked up the arrest warrant, and he was held on $215,425 bail.
Ouch, that's serious. Oh. How much time is he looking at?
I don't know, but he lives in the Tampa Bay area and actually was named in a criminal complaint filed in Vegas alleging that he failed to repay three casino loans totaling $200,000 obtained in July of 2012 at the Wynn Las Vegas Resort. They actually got the Wynn Resort, and then they just built a new one out there not too long ago. I think it's called Encore. So it's a very popular resort destination. $200,000, pretty big loan. But Nevada treats these written casino IOUs called markers like a fraudulent bad check. So state law actually lets prosecutors collect 10% processing and prosecution fee with any settlement. So they're obviously going to try to make sure that debt is paid. The prosecutor handling the case in Las Vegas said Monday he had not heard from Tarver representatives or authorities in Florida about the case. And obviously Tarver's professional career included 30 victories and 6 losses. And he won a bronze medal as a light heavyweight at the Atlanta Olympics in 1996. And, of course, he was in the movie Rocky, which we started our show with.
Yeah.
He was in Rocky Balboa. So we probably won't be able to get a hold of Tarver for a
while.
Anyway, we have a couple more stories here. The TRT ban has extended to California. The California State Athletic Commission decided to announce a total ban, just like Nevada, and also the same goes for Brazil, which is very surprising because we've got an article here from the perspective of Antonio Silva, who is actually currently serving a suspension for TRT issues, testing too positive, too high, I should say. But this Dr. Marcio Tenor is in charge of the Brazilian Athletic Commission, which oversees MMA. And before this ban came out in Nevada, he was actually not only in approval of TRT, but actually was the one who supposedly screwed up Silva's injections. He's the one who actually gave his injections. And now he's gone on board with the political movement here to ban the whole treatment.
What a courageous decision. What a courageous decision, huh? So against the grain. Jeez.
So we're going to go into a little overtime here, so hang with us. But Silva says, the way I see, he wants to play the good guy role. He's just being political because he was never against DRT, but I don't judge him. And Dr.
Guys, listen, I'm going to check out because I got a pack for Saturday. I'm leaving early Saturday morning.
All right, sure, Tom.
So I will talk. Tom, I sent you an article on what I wrote a couple years ago, freedom fight between Leonard and Mayweather, Sugar Ray Leonard and Floyd Mayweather. So when you get a chance, check it out. Tell me what you think. Yeah.
We'll
other than that, you guys have a good weekend.
Sounds like a plan.
Do you watch any highlights of Major League Baseball? Any Florida games, you might see me on TV.
All right.
Oh, okay.
And Yeah, I'll be down there looking like Uncle Creed, as I call him.
Cool.
Except on Monday's game is February or March 17th. Instead of going as Uncle Creed, it's going to be Uncle Mick Creed.
Mick Foley and Apollo Creed.
No. Uncle Mick Creed. Like, instead of, like, an Italian, instead of being a Dago, I'm a Mick Dago. You know, if you're not the same, get it?
Yeah.
There you go.
All right, gentlemen, have a good night. Enjoy the rest of your show, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right,
buddy.
Thanks a lot, man. Does not like this. Well, he actually said that he respects the guy. He says, Dr. Chenoir is a great person. He made a mistake with me, and I was upset because he hasn't admitted. But I understand why he didn't. He is in charge of the MMA in Brazil. He is Flamengo's, which is the most popular soccer team in Brazil. He's their doctor. And he said a lot of famous people have appointments with him. If he had admitted, his image would be damaged. And as far as fighting without TRT, Silva said, they thought that the prohibition was the best, but who has proved to have a clinical need will be harmed. I will try to continue my career in the best way. I can't retire. I was born to fight. Obviously, he's still on 9-month suspension, so it's going to be a while before he does fight.
Yeah.
And, of course, speaking of Brazil, I sent you the Tough Brazil Episode 1. I haven't watched it myself yet, but apparently this Tough Brazil thing is a little bit more dramatic than even Rousey versus Tate on that season. I don't think there's as much crying, but
yeah.
Apparently, the latest story, after the first big story was Silva and Chael Sonnen and Wanderlei Silva, have already been in a tussle, a physical tussle on this show. Apparently nobody was badly injured or anything, but you know, they had to be broken up. Now, actually, one of the fighters was thrown off the show for attacking Sonnen. And maybe they haven't really clarified whether it was an actual competitor on the show or one of the coaches, but somebody smacked him in the dome, basically. And Sonnen actually talked with Michael Landsberg of Off the Record and said, I'm not positive on the name. I never met the gentleman. I never did. And after the whole thing happened, he got thrown out. So, you know, and to quote Dana White told him he ought to be arrested. I never did meet him. I'm not sure. So it must have been a pretty sudden attack.
Yeah.
Obviously, we know that Brazil has a lot of hard feelings towards Sonnen.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, if that's Sonnen's only damage, he ought to consider that a victory getting out of there with that. I mean, there was all kinds of speculation on that. And I would imagine Sonnen probably didn't venture too far out in the mean streets of Rio, walking around hitting the bars or anything. He probably stayed right in his hotel room, I would guess.
Definitely shaping up to be a good season there. And obviously it's going to be a great fight. But the other thing is Sonnen's been one of those TRT champions. So how's he going to do without it? He's actually
He had said that he may be retiring. So all this may be for nothing.
But I don't think he's going to retire before this fight. I think he's got too much pride on him to retire.
Well, he was saying he's got a huddle with his team. I mean, and I don't know if it's a big ploy he's saying, but he just said he's got to get with his doctor and the rest of his team and see just how he's going to go about preparing without it. And if he can't do it, he's the first one that brought that up. He said he may be forced to retire.
Right.
So, how it goes.
Anyone, 7 weeks to 90 days. Is the timetable a doctor can help you with tailing off your testosterone use and getting your body
now? I wonder, was he taking the injections? Do you know, or does anyone know?
I don't know. You know, that's the thing. Like, you know, obviously, you see the commercials about these rub-on creams, you know, and the underarm stuff. And, you know, it sounds
right,
pretty
well,
easy. It's just
some of that you can order right online. You can order it right off the internet.
So the thing is, like, we actually we didn't talk about it that much tonight, but I read an article from a guy that does the exemptions and has an anti-aging clinic out there in Nevada. And he is so against this ban because he just basically says it's going to force it underground. And he said, actually, it's already easier for guys to do it without the exemption because it's less scrutiny. And, you know, Dana White even said after the guys started to come out of the woodwork getting these exemptions that these guys are going to have the shit tested out of them. So obviously, even with the ban, they're still going to be testing these guys because they're the ones that identified themselves as wanting to use it.
Mm-hmm.
So the same guys that have been using it under the radar, this isn't going to affect them unless they increase the testing. And obviously, we've had that debate before, and it doesn't seem like there's going to be the funding coming forward for that to happen because then you might have half of your roster on the sidelines for a year.
The State Athletic Commission pleads poverty, but I don't think the UFC could get away with pleading poverty. I mean, if they're serious about testing, let them pay for it.
Well, the UFC has this convenient thing to say, well, it's not our job, it's the Athletic Commission's, and I think the real reason, like I said, is because they're afraid. They're afraid that there's so many people doing it that if they start doing random testing on an even playing field where everybody is subject to it and everybody gets tested, certain time, then you're definitely going to catch people. You're going to catch a lot of people. Not only is that going to derail fights, but whole cards could get wiped out. And that's going to cost them more than it's worth to pay for the testing. But anyway. Speaking of Silvas, we've got another Silva story. Thiago Silva has just been given the go signal to fight in an MMA ring again. But obviously he's been released by the UFC, so I'm not going to fight there.
Mm-hmm.
The judge in his case allowed Silva to fight professionally as long as he complies with the restrictions imposed on him. He's under house arrest. He's on $25,000 bond. And basically he's going to be monitored electronically and he's going to submit to random drug and alcohol testing. Speaking of testing. And he'll also have to attend some anger management seminars. And of course, he has to stay away from his former wife, Vesa Silva. And here's another case where not only TRT is a concern, but illegal drugs. I mean, this guy is apparently doing a lot of cocaine. And if there was some kind of random testing, maybe this whole debacle could have been avoided. Could have made sure all this crap didn't happen with Silva. Could have been some kind of intervention for his drug use, but now we've got this situation where it's just another black eye for the sport. There's a guy in MMA who's trying to threaten his wife and new boy.
I mean, it just seems like with cocaine, if I had a fight coming up, I'd want my opponent doing tons of cocaine. It's funny how that works, you know. You remember Michael Doakes back when he was defending his WBA version, I believe he had then, against Harry Coetzee back in September of 83, and that happened right here in my hometown. And I found out from good sources that Doakes was so far gone on coke, he was actually getting high during his training, and it showed in the fight. I know it was a little before your time, but again, I know you're a historian. And did you ever see that fight? Any replays of it?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, Coetzee, I don't know if you're familiar with him at all, but he came to fame when he knocked out Leon Spinks in the first round. And this is after Muhammad Ali relinquished the title after he beat Spinks in a rematch and they were having an elimination tournament. And Coetzee had that bionic right hand. I suppose he had brittle hands, and he had surgery on his hand, and he was kind of a plotter, but he had some boxing skills, kind of a plotter, but one heck of a right hand, and he'd come up short a few times. He lost a boring decision to Big John Tate for the title, and then he fought Mike Weaver and had Weaver about knocked out, but then he gassed out and Weaver finished him off, so he was getting another chance, and he made the most of it. He knocked Doakes down in the fifth round and stopped him in the tenth. And Doakes did not look good throughout the whole fight. But no one really knew how bad Doakes' cocaine problem was at that time. But, yeah, that's not exactly a ticket to getting in shape for a fight, you know, cocaine. But get off on a tangent here.
Well, we're on the same topic of drugs. Might as well, mention there's been a big article in High Times featuring Matt Riddle. And it's pretty interesting. It came out on the 7th here of March, and it goes through his whole career. There's this talk about pot. Of course, he takes some shots at Dana White and the pay structure in the UFC. He had his whole career in the UFC before they threw him out for the positive test there. He was asked at one point, does marijuana help you as a fighter? And he said, I'd never go into the ring high. I wouldn't even want to get high the night before a fight. Marijuana just helps me relax. They classify it as a performance-enhancing drug. I wouldn't say that. I'm high-strung. I don't smoke marijuana. I'm aggressive. I'm not fun to be around. It makes me relax, increases my appetite a little, and it's got no side effects. How can it be categorized as a performance-enhancing drug?
I would say there's a lot of jiu-jitsu guys that supposedly not only watch instructionals when they're stoned, but actually get out and roll when they're stoned.
Right.
But I don't think that it would be, because it can kick in the right side of your brain and see things a little different perhaps. But, yeah, as far as performance enhancing, that to me would be the last thing in the world you'd want to do before a fight. I can't imagine that.
All right. I got two more little stories here, and then we're done. First one, Ray Sifo is thinking about getting back into kickboxing. He's 43 years
really?
Old.
How old is he? How old is Ray?
43.
Oh, okay.
He had to step up on his own MMA card not too long ago and ended up losing the fight by TKO, but obviously kickboxing is a little bit different, you can probably get away with doing it at a little advanced age, I guess. But apparently it all comes from a longtime friend of his, Ernesto Hoost. He's actually looking to fight again and asked Sifo if he was interested. And Sifo said, yeah, 100%. Now, Hoost is even older. He's 5 years old. He's 48. And he came out recently out of an eight-year retirement. He'll face Thomas Stanley on March 23rd at a Japanese event known as the Hoost Cup. So, obviously, that's his name. But apparently, Sifo says that he and Hoost aren't going to fight each other, but we'll talk about getting back into it. Sifo says it's official, but he has been having conversations about it. And he guessed that whenever he does decide if he's going to fight, that fight will probably happen later this year in Japan. Maybe even as part of
the supplement. Boy, I'll tell you, this is stuff that was science fiction a few years ago. You know, as far as guys that age, that's encouraging. We'll see how far we can push the window here.
Right.
This just gets me motivated now. Maybe it's time to train again.
Yeah. Sifo is 2-2 in MMA, but as far as kickboxing goes, he's 56, 22-1 in his career. Has several world titles to his credit, and also has been a multi-time world Muay Thai champion. So we'll see. I guess he's going to have to take a page from Bernard Hopkins' book and take it to kickboxing and boxing. We'll see. And final story is about women's MMA and a little bit of boxing. Ann Wolfe is the latest one to come into the Ronda Rousey debate. I don't think there's going to be any chance of these two fighting. Ann Wolfe has come out. She's got a 24-1 record with 16 knockouts in boxing, and she said she would F Ronda Rousey up, since we can actually say.
Well, this is interesting now. This is really interesting because Ann Wolf's a monster. Who is she just training? She's had some great success as a trainer. I'm trying to think of who it was that she had just been working with, but he'd been very successful, and I guess Ann Wolf just really gets on him in the gym. And I remember when she knocked out Vonda Ward, a very brutal knockout. Probably find that one on YouTube. I don't know what her ground game is like, but boy, this I'm intrigued now. I'm really intrigued about this.
Someone apparently asked her, you know, where's this fight going to be, MMA or boxing? And she just shot back with, I don't give a fuck. We can meet in the streets. I don't disrespect
Yeah, I mean, she... Yeah. Oh, wow. Never a dull moment.
If she got close enough, but... You know, obviously, this is all talk. Last time we saw a real big-time boxer cross right over to MMA was James Toney.
Well, I would... I know Ann is younger, and... Well, we'll have to see how it goes, but I would say this, if it happens, I'm watching.
Right, hell yeah. And that's about it. That's all the little tidbits I've got for this week.
Okay, well, like I said, let's get ready for the card Saturday night. It's stacked, and I think we can, I mean, to me, this is the kind of fight, these are the kind of fights that the fans want to see, and that's what I'm pumped about. So,
I was really impressed with, you know, everybody's got a winning record on this card, number one, and the matchmaking just seemed really, really up to par on this one. These guys are all in decent matches. I think, you know,
I'm kind of wondering here, Rich, if they look back on that last card and says, we can't do two in a row like that, you know? So,
yeah, there really weren't a lot of big names on that last card, except for the main event and the co-main event there.
So we'll see how it goes. All right, well, let's enjoy it. And next week, again, as always, lots to talk about. Do we have a guest lined up for next week, or do you know yet?
We do not, but I'm thinking, actually, Bobby Gunn Jr. is making his pro debut this weekend. So maybe if he gets the win, I'll contact our boy over there, Matt Yanowski, who represents him for the PR stuff, and maybe see if we can get him on.
Sounds good, bud. Okay, so let's do it up next week, all right?
You got to get Tony some boxing, you know?
Exactly. So we'll get him going. Okay, buddy, we'll check in next week, and let's enjoy this weekend, huh? All right.
Yep. Bye. Adios, folks. Have a good night. Thanks for stopping by.